PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me this week is Mr. Nick Sherburn, club champion guru. Some would know him as the Dean of Club Champion University. What's happening, Nick?
Hey, thanks for having me back. Now, just ended up, you know, we're just closing out the season here in Chicago, kind of. Although the weather's been great.
Yeah, I'd like the record to show when Nick and I were planning a time to record. I had to move one due to a hurricane flying through it, and I was right, Nick. I lost power two times in that hour we were supposed to record, so that was a big win for us not doing that.
Yeah, that would have been bad if we got halfway through and had to redo it.
Right, but then the second one, you're off playing golf somewhere, having a good time. I'm at home working. Like, how does that work? How'd you get so lucky?
Well, occasionally, you know, that's the nice – I wouldn't say I played a ton of golf. You don't get into the golf industry to play a ton of golf. But, you know, you make a lot of great connections when you've been in this business. And, you know, I've been doing it for 25 years. And, you know, there's constantly opportunities to go do fun things. And one of the things is Fujikura Golf Shafts does is they call it the Dealer Cup. So they bring, you know, it's basically the dealer. They make two teams of dealers and employees, and we battle it out for four rounds. And we did it at Sea Island this year, and it was fun.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. And I mean, I'd assume you'd rather they pick a real nice, remote, warm location in like January or February to do something like that, but you can't be that picky, right?
Yeah, man, I agree. No, because it was, I joked when we got down there on Sunday night or Monday morning when we went to go play our first round, the caddy was like, so, oh, it's kind of hot today. I'm like, you know what? This is no different than Chicago right now. So, but no, I'm going to need to find somewhere in January or February to go hide for a couple of rounds of golf.
Sure. Well, tell me how Club Champion's doing this year. Has it been kind of crazy in 24 or what's it look like?
Yeah. So we've had, you know, it's been a good year. I mean, obviously, you know, with the COVID booms kind of, you know, leveling out, but the tide is high. You know, it brought a lot of people to the game and it still continues to stay strong, and we're continuing to open stores. By the end of the year, I think this year we've opened 13 stores. We'll continue that pace of opening somewhere around 15 every year, but with the goal of just continuing to bring club fitting as close to people as possible.
Just a worldwide expansion of goodness, club champion goodness.
Yeah, we have that too, the worldwide. Yeah, so.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a question that's been lingering, and I'm really curious about it because there is a goal to have a brand style. And I think when you get repeat customers, these are people who have been fit, have been very happy with their fitting, and are now looking into their next set of product and are coming back to you in hopes of getting the same sort of experience. So one of my big questions to you today is, how do you innovate without separating yourself from what people loved about your brand this year, last year, 3 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if it's really the innovation part comes from like what you can do to in the fitting from a brand standpoint. I don't think we change a whole lot. The motto will never change: better fit, lower scores. And that's our value proposition. I think some people just think, well, Club Champion, they're great at fitting. Well, yeah, we're great at fitting, but then we translate that fitting into the clubs that actually make it outdoors. And what I mean by that is there's plenty of people in almost every one of us that have had an experience where we hit something, whether it was our buddies, demo day or whatever, and then we go try to find it somewhere else, and then we never hit it that way again. That's because making two identical golf clubs, there's a lot of components, there's a lot of specs, there's a lot of everything to go to it. And so a lot of people think, well, Nick, you're just selling that to sell you golf clubs. No, I mean, it's the truth. Like, you know, when you're a tour player, you go out and you go to the tour vans and they work with you until they got a golf club that works for you. That's the same thing we do at Club Champion. But why I'm saying that is that that's never going to change. The educational part of it's going to change. But I would say one of the things that we do to innovate, like, for example, and I tell people all the time, we have, like, when I started 25 years ago, I had, let's call it, five brands on the wall. You know, TaylorMade, Titleist, Callaway, whatever, like five major brands. And then maybe there was like a handful of shafts like ProLite or EI70, ProForce, Speeder 757, whatever. There wasn't much, right? But you could still fit somebody better than what they could just get, right? More specific. you now look at the marketplace, and you know this, Dan, you live in that forum world. There is a plethora of products. I mean, we have 65,000 plus, but I mean, there is just so much out there. So for us, it's like, how do you still give that all-in fit, but keep all those products in check, right? And that's what one of the big innovations we've done with our brand is we've adopted the AI. I know it's a buzzword, but the reality of it is the world needs it. In a way, because you can't analyze everything that's out there these days. It's just humanly impossible. So, you know, the goal part about our business, and this is our big innovation that we're going to be promoting more and more lately, is that we take a million swings on average a month across the year, okay, in TrackMan from 330 different fitters. That's a lot of great data on fitting, like how certain products work with certain swings, all that kind of stuff. And we've created a co-pilot, we call it, because it's never going to replace the fitter. It's never 100% correct, but it's something to help them sift through those 65,000 plus combinations so they can be more efficient in the bay, but also make sure you're not gypped on anything. It's not like there's a bias there. It's this is what works for that type of thing. So that's a long-winded answer, but it's kind of where we're heading is that way.
So let's chip away at that because I'm not fully sure I understand. So is the idea that you get a couple swings from someone using a certain shaft profile, or maybe you find a profile that comes close to suiting them, and then the computer can spit out additional shafts that have that same sort of profile that could incorporate?
Sort of, but not really. So it's just taking their gamer. So for example, Dan, if you came in, let's say we were doing a driver fit, we go, okay, we want you to hit 10 swings in the TrackMan, okay, with your driver. And then the system's looking at like how we built this system out was it's looking at like what the optimizer looks at for TrackMan. So it's looking at kind of your swing, but also ball speed, launch, spin, but it's looking at your attack angle, all that kind of stuff. And then it's saying, okay, this is what kind of numbers we need based on that swing to be optimal. And then it's looking into those millions and millions and millions of data points to find out where that swing worked before and then what the fit ultimately came out of that, because we have all that data. So it triangulates all that, and then it learns over time. It keeps learning and learning and learning. So, for example, Dan comes in, he swings that. Now, all of a sudden, based on your swing and your current ballistics on your driver, it's going to start giving recommendations on the shafts. And again, it's not going to say this one's a 99% match. That would be a lie. I just learned through this process that, like, when you see that, it's kind of a fudge. So it's just really, this is like a path you follow. And as you keep going, it'll refine the path. And it's, and again, it's not, the fitter's going to interject some things they may like too. But at the end of the day, it's helping you not miss anything, I guess, is the best part to put. And it's funny. You know, we all get set in our ways as fitters, right? We know what can solve certain problems when we get lost in it. It's funny. You'll go to a forum and be like, well, Club Champion only sells Acura. No, that's not true. In fact, they're number four. They would like to be number one on our list, but they're number four in sales. So it's not like we always sell Acura. And so, but what happens is probably one store where there's a fitter that's a great fitter. He uses Acura to solve a lot of equations, right? Well, this keeps stirring the pot. And it's not that fitter was doing anything bad before. It's just this is you're learning from other fitters. And I'll get in fits with this thing and I'll be like, oh, my God, no way that suggestion will work. And then I put it in and I'm like, holy cow, that worked. So it's helping us learn as a team of 300 and some fitters how to all become better fitters and how to not miss anything and make every experience not only efficient so we're not swinging 500 times in a fitting, but also making sure we're covering all the bases.
So you made a really interesting point there, solving problems with something that has solved a problem before. And I'm generalizing that as much as I can, because I've heard commentary before, especially when it comes to fitting, is they have favoritism. They lean on a certain club or, you know, go to a certain guy. And I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about fitting in general. There's a lot of perspective out there that, well, they always lean this way. Sometimes they'll say it about Club Champion and sometimes they'll say it about a different fitter. But I want you to go a little bit deeper on that to sort of really it's not necessarily debunking, but it's also sort of explaining. Like you mentioned, this guy had found like a really solid rhythm in utilizing a product or a product line to solve
sure
a very familiar problem. And it's not like that's the only problem. It just seems to really do a nice job of solving that problem. Yeah. So go ahead.
I get it. Now I know what you want. I will answer both ways, though. I'm going to say, for the people that do think we do that, our fitters don't know inventory. They don't know margin. And they have no spiffs, no nothing. So I hear all that stuff all the time. I'm happy to show you any books, anything. We do not have any of that. So we are brand agnostic, and we stay true to that. Trust me, all the companies would love to spiff my guys. And they spiff a lot of people at a lot of different places. That does not work at Club Champion. We use those dollars. We tell them, use those dollars to pay for marketing endeavors for us. We'll take care of our fitters and make sure they stay happy. But we don't need them pushing one brand or another. But to what I think you're really getting at is why would somebody maybe get stuck on a certain product for a certain way to solve it? Well, it's very simple. So there's certain things, like when you see a fitting, when I start seeing numbers as a club fitter, right? So I see a lack of ball speed, okay? Well, it could be that they're not hitting the center of the club. It could be that they're not creating enough lag or, you know, speed in the shaft. Well, okay, well, maybe I need a little softer handle section, right? And a little stiffer tip section. Maybe that's what that person needs to create more bend in the shaft, to create more speed at the bottom. And so to do that, you start finding, okay, this shaft seems to really be doing well for that person that needs it, right? And so you'll get people that hit it high on the face, low on the face. Well, maybe the shaft's too light. Maybe the shaft's too heavy. Maybe the shaft's too stiff in this section. Again, you'll start seeing those tendencies. And then you're like, okay, well, this shaft has helped me in the past because it has this profile. And that's what it does. And the reality is that there's probably five shafts with that similar profile from five different brands, right? He or she that in the bay just has had luck with this one. So they go back to it to solve that problem. And again, I don't have a problem with that. You know, at the end of the day, I tell every customer, I go, numbers are numbers. They don't lie. So who cares what brand it is? Who cares what any of that other stuff is? As long as you're getting the data, that's all that matters at the end of the day. It's the whole point of Ryan Club Champion and what I started was to take the brand out of it, to an example. And I know brands hate that me say that, even though we're great partners with them. But our job is performance, right? And so as long as we find performance, that's what matters. That's the name of the game. But again, it's that, you know, like you look at Acura, for example, they're a club fitting specific company, right? And so that's who they service 99% of the time is club fitters. And so they listen to club fitters and they listen to our club fitters and then they go, they hear what we need, right? Like, oh, we need this kind of weight progression. We need this kind of torque progression. We need this kind of profile progression. And then they create that and it helps, you know, fitters will gravitate. But a lot of brands do that to us now. They're listening more and more. Hey, what do you need? You know, what kind of profiles would help solve, you know, the certain things you see? So it is getting a little better these days because you have more options.
So I want to dig just a hair deeper into that because I think I've made some good sense of it. And I'm certainly guilty of it myself because I have buddies who go to demo days. We go together and, you know, it's a pretty easy thing to get super comfortable with suggesting one thing. And here's kind of my thought. If a fitter is a good fitter, the goal is to get the best fit in the shortest amount of time possible. And what I mean by that is the shortest amount of swings, the fewest swings, because there is a shelf life to a good solid fitting in terms of swing total, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's okay. The toughest part of our job as so, these products have grown.
So my thought is they see similar results and similar challenges because while each golfer has a unique swing, there are similarities eventually that find their way. So if they've solved a similar issue with the same shaft, let's say 7 out of 10 times the last grouping in who had a similar profile, they may start with that shaft this time rather than finish with it to see if, okay, can we take that leap now? And if it's not great, we'll mix in some of the other ones we're familiar with. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's part of that. To me, efficiency, to your point, is important. Okay. You know, people will see on our website, okay, if iron fish should be an hour and a half. And if it's not, some people, if it doesn't go an hour and a half, they're like, well, I feel like I got gypped. And I'm like, excuse me. And they might throw a complaint in and I'll call them myself. I always call every person that has a complaint. And I said, well, you know, you got to be careful with that because the whole goal here is not to spend time. The goal is to solve your problem, right? Solve the issues you have to make you a consistent golfer. if the fitter can get there in less swings, you should be thanking him because or her, because otherwise you're going to walk out of there sore as can be. And yeah. I mean, listen, it's one of those deals where if you like, a lot of our fitters have been fitting for a long time, right? And they've done a lot of fits, more than the average bear. I always joke, like when they go, well, my pro, and I go, no offense, I love pros and I was a PGA guy myself, but they do maybe a handful or 50 fits a year. Our fitters are doing 500 to 650 a year, fits a year. They know how to get there, and they know how to get there efficiently a lot of the times. And so, you know, because they've seen it, they've seen the golf swing. So anyway, that it is, you know, I tell everybody, I go, the goal is hopefully to get out of there with as few swings as possible. If you're a customer, trust me, not more.
So
more,
I,
not better.
I'm curious to know, for every great experience, I'm sure people bring in the stories that they've had in poor fittings in the past, or things they hadn't explored, or things they hadn't tried because the demo days they go to or the other fitters they go to don't fully run the gamut. I'm going to use an example here just to sort of tee you off. I have a buddy who swings pretty darn hard at the golf ball, and he went for a driver fitting last week and said, want to guess what my best driver was? And I said, not really, because it's probably going to piss me off, respectfully. And he goes, it was my gamer. I go, okay, well, what'd you hit? And he named off four heads. And I said, okay, did you hit this one? Nope. Did you hit this one? Nope. Did you hit this one? Nope. Did you hit this entire brand? Nope. It's like, of course you fit into your gamer, because you didn't really experience all the heads. Right. And of the companies you tried, it wasn't the right head for you from my perspective. So, you know, there are so many guys out there that can't seem to get that benefit of a fitting, but they don't fully experience it in these places. What's your feedback on that?
Well, that would be interesting to me, because like, to me, that's just a missed opportunity by that fitter in general, right? Like, I don't know what his issues are, right? Like, one of the things I always like to explain to golfers, because they don't, you and I know this, Dan, but most of them don't understand it, is this is just a math equation, right? So the USGA has put a limit on what a golf club head can do, right? And your swing you have a certain swing, and that's what you do. And so there's a certain optimal of that, right? And so if you're not at optimal, meaning your ball speed, launch, spin, whatever it is, then if you're not testing everything to see if it truly is just you, then what are we doing here? Like that's the whole point of a fit. Like, I'm exhausting every opportunity. Hopefully it doesn't take me a million swings to get there, to get to that magical, what I call top of the hill, right? Like, there is no better. That is as best as math says it's going to be. And so it sounds like in that particular instance, we're not at the best we can be, but yet we stopped before we even thought we could get there. And so
he said it was a nice $125 range session.
Right. So like that's my point is if you're going to walk the person out of there without like saying their driver's the best, then it better truly be the best. And maybe in this option it was, but it doesn't sound like it was totally proven out because there was a lot of stuff missed. Now, if you came in and show, if I saw the numbers, I might say differently, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a loaded question. It just made me laugh because I just had the conversation last week, but it was one of those ones where they didn't even try different heads in an entire line. Like they knew what his gamer was. So they stuck with that style in all the other heads they tried. They didn't even mix it up. Like no max, no mid, no LS, you know, none of that. It was just, let's try a couple heads and see what happens.
Which, yeah, you're right. If they're not doing that, they're just sticking around what they have, then you're already off to a bad start.
Yeah.
But I also, like I tell people, I go, listen, I struggle when I go, because we secret shop a lot of people and different things and fitters. And again, I don't like badmouthing anything, but here's one thing I do tell people to watch out for. If somebody just tells you, hey, you gained 5 yards or you gained 10 yards, you should buy this, right? Did they tell you what you should be at? Because that's what my point was before, right? Like, there's a math that says, okay, I can tell them after their this 10-shot warm-up, right? That's what we do, this 10 shots on our AI or whatever. But it's not forget AI on this example because TrackMan's what's telling us. I now know after those 10 shots how far you off are from the promised land, the 100% math equation, right? And we explain that to every golfer. Like, hey, in a perfect world, in a vacuum, this is where you'd be. And that's my goal, to get you there today, right? And so that's what we're chasing, okay? If you're not getting that information, like, it doesn't sound like your buddy was ever told that. So, like, he just walks away going, well, I guess I don't think he really walked away thinking that. But if he was a normal consumer, right, that doesn't have the knowledge like he might have or you have or I have, they're just walking away going, well, I guess my driver's the best it could be. Is it? Because did he tell you that you're at the best, or just tell you, you know, whatever? And so that's one big part of club fitting that people don't realize is there's a best that can be. And if your fitter isn't telling you that and showing you how close he or she got you to that, then you're missing out.
So you saying that everyone who goes out there should tell or demand from their fitter, what's my benchmark and can we get there?
Correct. Oh yeah.
I love that. I do that.
Absolutely. Cause it's not a hard equation, and all these launch monitors basically have it. They have optimizer for like functions on there that do the math for the fitter these days. Before, we used to just have these, you know, charts we'd pull up and we'd show them and blah, blah, blah. You know, now there's a lot more that goes into it as we've, you know, gotten technology, and there's great optimizers to show you like, hey, if you want a high, medium, low, whatever it is, you know, all these things. And yeah, I would demand it.
Nice. I know that was a pretty good tangent we just went off. And it doesn't really tie into my next question, but I think it's the right time of year to ask you about it, because you guys are probably just as excited as we are to see some of this new product getting rolled out by companies. I know plenty of them tend to spread it out a bit more than they used to. It used to be like PGA show season, and now there's a little bit more scattered in. But how excited are you and the guys over there to see this new product and see what it can do for golfers?
Well, you're talking to the junkie of all junkies. So excited. This is a fun time of year. Because, you have some launches, like we just had the Titleist launch and we had a Mizuno launch and stuff like that. So that's really cool. But now I'm starting to see all the stuff that's coming in January and February and, you know, the innovation that happens every year. And, I mean, and listen, some years I'm just kind of walk away from this time of year and I'm like, meh, it's going to be a little bit, a lot of the same. And then some years I'm like, holy cow, there's some real innovation happening. I think generally speaking, we're seeing, you know, some smaller innovation, but it's good innovation. Like there's some new adapters coming, or like cogs or hosels where you have more adjustability. You're having, you know, I think there's this whole forgiveness world. To me, like, that's just a huge thing, because when we're fitting most average golfers and even pros, if you talk to them, and I was just talking to a pro, touring pro last week about this exact subject, you know, we're fitting for misses a lot of times, right? Like, if we can eliminate misses, that's one of the biggest ways to help somebody lower their score. And so, you know, people go, well, how can they make a driver any hotter? I'm like, they don't really make the driver hotter. I mean, the center is the center, and that's as hot. But the problem is, hey, guys, we don't always hit it in the center. Even the best club fitter can't always get you to hit it in the center. It's not, unless you'd probably be playing a high-level amateur golf or playing professionally if you're hitting on the center every time. And even those guys will tell you they miss. And so, you know, the idea is they're getting so good at, like, and I can speak for this myself because I'm a toe whacker, as I'll call it. I hit out on the toe more often than I hit in the center a lot of times, especially if the pressure's on. And I mean, the things I can get away with today on that are amazing, because they've gotten that face optimized where you can get out there and still get distance off it. I mean, just the other day in this tournament, I hit a 7-iron. I mean, I felt like I almost missed this thing. And I just put the new Gen 7s into the bag from PXG, because I did a podcast with Mike Nicolette, and he had been playing the CBs and went to the, and he's a past great golfer. So I immediately ran over to the studio, got in the bag, fit. I hit a 7-iron so far off the toe, and I bet you I lost 4 yards, 5 yards on it. I couldn't believe I was still almost on the green.
That's crazy.
I know. It's just nuts. And I looked at him. They're like, oh, that was a pretty good shot. I'm like, I turned around. I showed him the face. I go, look at that toe mark.
Basically hit it on the badge behind it.
Yeah. Right. that's the kind of cool stuff, like the innovation. Like, is it going to wow you, like, when you look at the golf club? Probably not. But when you hit it, you're like, holy cow, that's easy to hit. Now, to me, that's exciting because, again, that's what most average golfers struggle with.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of really exciting stuff in the driver side, but what's fascinated me has been the iron lineup and how much it's changed over the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, we went pretty hard on the hollow body iron. We're seeing that refined beautifully. I thought Mizuno did an awesome job tightening up their five series, I guess you could call it. But one of the things that's been sort of mind-blowing is seeing how these companies do it in different ways. We just saw Callaway come out with Thai Fusion, which is just absurd. And, you know, Cobra with limited irons doing these just crazy things that promote so much more than should exist in these irons in different ways. What do you think seeing that, Mr. Club Junkie?
Well, like the 770 to me is one of the ones that I couldn't, the past couple generations of 770s, I'm a five handicap, but like I said, I get out on the tone and anything I like smaller, but I gotta be careful because I don't want to lose a lot on those toe hits. That 770 looks like the most like little kind of thin thing, and you can hit it way out on the toe and it still goes. Like, that's to your point. Like, we got all kinds, and they're all doing it different, whether it's different kind of face designs, it's different kind of way they support the faces, the materials that go in it. And again, each one of us a little bit different mousetrap, but the whole point is they're all figuring out a way to get you better at the game of golf. But it's also, for me, you know, I deal with so many golfers that, you know, well, I just can't look at that shovel. I can't do it. But in my head, I'm like, that's your ego because, you know, you really need it. And so having, to your point, all these little packages, as I call them, like whether it's a blade, a straight forged cavity back, a two-piece forged cavity back with an undercut, to a hollow body player's club, to a, you know, middle, to a oversized. I mean, there's something for everybody these days. And I think, you know, when I look at innovation, yeah, there's innovation and forgiveness. There's innovation also in the sense that we're creating different packages for different types of golfers where we didn't have that before, right? Well, we didn't have as much of it. And to me, now you can marriage a lot more of what the person wants or likes with performance, which is good because a lot of times before, we'd have to have some tough conversations about, you know, what they should be playing to what they want to play.
Well, I remember years ago, it felt like all the technology was focused in the game improvement irons. And it's like, hey, that's really cool. You guys are doing awesome stuff. But, you know, I'm a player CB guy. I'm jealous, but I'm not moving. You know what I mean? And now it's like some of these irons are coming out that are tiny, that are just packed with stuff, you know, stuff you're trying to figure out. And it's like, maybe I can play along with this fun stuff while still getting that smaller, more compact profile that you had just mentioned because of ego.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like I said, that first time I picked up that new 770, I'm like, man, this looks beautiful. And I'm hitting it in the bay. And I'm like, I missed it a couple times and I didn't lose much out of it. And I'm like, holy cow, I could probably play these. Now, I prefer something a little bit bigger looking. I call them my Miller Lite clubs, where if I have one too many beers, I can still hit it. So I don't mind a slightly bigger, which is why the Gen 7 is okay with me. But that 770, I cannot believe how much forgiveness is in that. But there, to your point, you can go up and down the lineups of clubs and find something like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of my point, is it's interesting to see the way the companies are solving that problem right now. It's no longer just like we want to do this one thing with this iron lineup and they solve that. But then now it's like, hey, we're going to add that component to a smaller product that you can still work the ball. And I think Thai Fusion might be one of the best examples because it's such a small iron, but it's got like driver tier distance built in. Yeah, there, you know what I mean?
It's an interesting iron, to say the
it's
least.
It's wild.
That one could end up in my bag at some point too. I've been floating that one around too. It's because, to your point, it's got a great look to it. Again, that's kind of like my 770 thought. Although I feel like you're a little bit somewhere between a little bit more forgiving on that tie, but you're right. I mean, it's packed.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about the putter fitting and how much that's changed, or has it changed at all? And if it hasn't, do you think it should change a little bit here in the next couple of years?
Well, what needs to change is more people need to do it. That part needs to change. I can tell you, a club champion, I don't know if we'll change right now. I'm not planning to change anything because I think we have a good fitting process, and I'll talk about it in a sec. But you know, to me, it's just getting people to understand that, I mean, listen, it's a club you use every hole for the most part. It's there's more to it. Like, it's funny how many people like I bring up and just to prove a point, I'll be like, yeah, well, so what's the loft on your putter? And they'll be like, wait, putter has loft? And I'll be like, yeah, it does. And based on how you come through that ball with your hands, whether you're flinging the club head at it and adding loft or you're de-lofting it with your hands way ahead, long story short, you're de-lofting or lofting, and you're either throwing that ball in the air or you're jamming it in the ground. And they're like, wow, I had no idea. And it's fun. And I'll be like, well, what's your swing weight? And they'll be like, wait, what's the swing weight? And I'll start showing them that. And they'll be like, well, why is that important? And I'll be like, well, it has a lot to do with distance control. I said, if once we get you a fit, I'll hand you a super light putter, and I'll hand you a super heavy putter. One, you're going to be able to get by the hole pretty well, and one, you're going to slam way past or way short. And they're like, I had no idea. Well, I'm like, well, it's your muscles, man. It's how your shoulders go. So anyway, long story short is something that people take way too granted. They focus way too much on the feel and look of a putter. Not to say that's not important. It's just that should be secondary to everything else, like all the specs that go into it. And you look at Lab, and I mean, we sell a shitload of Lab. Sorry to say it, but that's how we say it. It is a lot of Lab. But the reality to me is, Lab is no different than any other putter I've ever fit. The whole idea behind Lab is to take the torque out of the putter. What I mean by that, or what they mean by that, is that whenever you see, like, they do that test and they're showing the face rotation and all that, long story short is all those rotations or all those little, like, things happening in the putter cause your body to have to react to it, right? And so you don't consciously think of this, but that's what's happening, is you're reacting to it. We've always fit for what we call toe hang. Sam Putt Lab shows us that. Anybody who's been through a putter fit with us knows we talk about toe hang. It's a big part of it, which is basically what Lab's talking about, but they're putting it in general of toe hang doesn't – we take toe hang completely out of it, just make a balanced putter that has no torque to it, where we just balance – we just marriage you with the proper toe hang of any putter, and that takes the torque out of it. So it depends how you look at it, but all these – shafts, the, you know, these putter shafts, all the Labs, and every brand's coming out with a Lab competitor now, or it will be, all they're trying to do is get those torques or forces that are causing you to swing inconsistently, is the best way to put it, out of it. But at the end of the day, you still need to be fit, and everybody should do it. I can lower any, if you haven't been putter fit, or at least I'll even take the chance of you haven't been putter fit, even if you've been putter fit, but not by club champion. If you were asking me, hey, Nick, how can you take the most strokes off my score the fastest? I'm going straight to the putter fitting carousel with you. Bottom line.
Really?
Yes. Bottom line. It's every person. I don't care. Every person tells me they're a good putter. I'm like, oh, really? Didn't see you on the, you know, leaderboard on Sunday when I was watching golf. Because the reality is if you look at statistics, we're not, I mean, amateur golfers are going to putt somewhere. They're going to be 32 to 36 putts typically. And honestly, higher in most cases. You can shave those real quick through eliminating three putts, all that kind of stuff.
Hmm. What do you think about all the different shafts that exist now for putters? Is that a welcome change, or is that necessary, or do you think it's a little bit extra?
No, I think it's welcomed. I think that there's different ways to do it. And you could use it as a feel thing. Okay. But again, I think feel is a very challenging thing. Because it's a challenging thing. What I like about these shafts and what people need to realize is, and this is where it's counterintuitive to most people's brains, you can make graphite shafts lower torque than you can steel shafts. I'm going to say that again. You can make graphite shafts lower torque than a steel shaft. And I know brains just struggle with that, but I mean, you look at graphite now, they make planes out of them. They make all kinds of stuff out of them. I mean, when you really think about it, Kevlar is like a pre-preg material that could be, it's been in golf shafts, right? It stops a bullet. So shafts can create this super low torque. So the whole idea behind most of these shafts, not every one of them, but most of them, is a super low torque in that shaft, and they can do that with graphite compared to steel. And they go and keep the feel, because if you make something low torque that's super stiff, right? Well, if you do that with steel, it's going to feel very hard. With graphite, you can soften it. But why is that important, Nick? Why do I care? Well, again, you don't hit your putter on the center every time. And so you get a little off the heel, you get a little off the toe, you're losing ball speed, which means you're going to be, and it's deflecting. The face is opening or closing. And so you're losing speed, and you're either pushing or pulling the putt more when you don't hit it center. So now you're eliminating, you're maybe not getting it up by the hole, and now you're three putting instead of two putting. With these shafts, because they're stiffer, the torque's tighter, all that, when you hit it a little off center, you're not getting as much deflection. The toe and heel aren't opening as much, and your ball speed's staying more consistent. So now your miss is still getting up by the hole, leaving you with it a little bit easier second putt. And so I'm a big believer. I've been playing, I mean, I think BGT was the first one to come really out, the stability shaft. And I've been playing putter shafts like that now for whatever it's been, 6-7 years. And I would never change it. And where I see the biggest difference is lag putting. That's in to the point, we don't, it's a bigger stroke, so we hit them off center more often.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, especially being on the THP community. You see all these different shafts go into play, and people tend to either love them or hate them, which I think is a good thing. I mean, when we're using a putter, you definitely have really discernible feedback that lasts a little bit longer than most other swings or strokes or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, we have the ability to be a little bit more, I guess, finicky in how we feel about it. But the truth is what you're saying is there is a definite benefit depending on your swing quality and putt quality.
It's the real deal. People are like, you know, they're expensive and they're like, why, you know, do I really need this? And I'm like, yes. I mean, it's just another part. The reality is if you get fit for a good putter, now there's junkies like me and you, Dan, that are going to get, I have a million of the same putters. They're all long necks. They all look different, but the reality is they're all the same. But I tell most people, I go, invest in a good putter from a good putter fitting. You're not going to change it for a while. Like, you don't need to. Like, you know, you want to come in and check out that the putt, you know, the loft or lie or something didn't get knocked off, getting it out of the bag and stuff like you should do with any of your clubs. But other than that, you're not going to need to change it. Your strokes, one thing that's really cool about putter fitting, in my opinion, is I can play around with my stroke all I want on that Sam Putt Lab, and no matter what, I will get back to square the same way every time. So I can sit there and make figure eights. I can do all kinds of stuff on Sam Putt Lab. It will tell me a face balance blade every time, it has for 15 years. And people go, and the fitters, I'll show them that, and they'll be like, well, I don't understand. And I'm like, you can think you're as wildly inconsistent as possible, but most of us, when we get to impact, we have an impact position. That's just what our body does. Well, however you do it, it gets back to that point. And that's what we've learned with TrackMan on normal swings, right? Like, we used to think everybody had to swing a certain way. Now we've realized, I was just talking to Rick Smith about this yesterday, a world-renowned teacher. Like, swing your swing, man, because at the end of the day, all we got to make sure of is that, A, we get the speed to the ball that we should be, and B, we have the face square to the path. That's it. Or square to the target. That's all we need to do. So you don't necessarily have to mimic everybody's swing to do that. So it's pretty interesting.
So I want you to say this a little bit louder, because I've had this debate way too many times already this year with putting strokes. The shape of the putter along with the toe hang itself and how the neck sits have a wild impact on not the way you putt, but the way the putter works with your stroke, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the toe hang I was talking about. So like how that neck sets the shaft above the head, and then there's an imaginary line that goes through. That's how the head balances off the shaft, right? And that's based on your stroke and your rotation you have in your stroke. You marriage your – so something with more toe hang, it's really hard to say over this, but the toe hang's naturally more open. If you have a big gated swing, open and close, that's probably going to work better for you because it flows with what you do. If you don't have much of that, probably more
I
of a
face. I can't translate into the toe thing I was talking about.
That was my phone. Technology, man. What can you do?
Theory thought I was talking to her all of a sudden. But anyway, when we get to the no toe hang out of it, that a putter that has more of a face balance, which you've heard about, Well, that's for more of a stroke that doesn't have a lot of rotation in it. It's more, I call it like the aircraft carrier, right? It takes a long time to turn, all those things. So people that have more of a straight back, straight through, less rotation, they're going to want less toe hang. And people that have more of the fighter jet swing, you know, more open and close, moving around, you're probably going to want more of a blade with toe hang. So, but that's why you go get fit to find out what your path is, what your natural tendencies are, all those things. And then we can marriage a putter with that to take all these torques out of it, have it flow, consistency, all that kind of stuff. Plus, you know, then we can get the loft right. We can get the weight right. We can get the length right, the grip right, because grip has a lot to do with it too. Not only from a weight standpoint, but usually the bigger the grip, the more I can take arc out of your swing. So like we've done studies where like, you know, remember the original jumbo super stroke that like KJ Choi, that I think they still sell, but it's called like the 5.0. You never see anybody use it anymore. You take that, I can almost invert the stroke. And then as I went smaller, I can bring the arc back in the stroke for most people.
Yeah, it's a wild thing. And not just arc, but face rotation in the stroke, which I guess technically are fairly similar and work sort of in tandem. But it's always fascinating to me to see people go, well, I tried a mallet this week and it didn't work out, so I just moved back to my blade. It's like, okay, did you try a mallet that wasn't face balanced? Well, like, what does that mean?
That's the thing, because there's multiple toe hangs for every style of putter, right? So like you can have face balance, moderate toe hang to heavy toe hang with any blade or mallet. So, you know, there's a marriage you need of mallet and toe hang or puzzle style, because that's what creates the toe hang. So, yeah, I mean, these are things that people overlook and they go, well, I'm a pretty good putter. No, you're not. I'm just telling you, I'm sorry. That's where we can have the biggest improvements in our game the fastest. So yeah, you still got to read the putt, but you're going to give yourself a lot. Where I say it makes a difference, because some people goes, well, I don't feel like I make as many putts. I make just as many putts. Okay, that's fine. But how many less times have you three putted? Well, yeah, I've had a lot less putts. Well, that's my point. You're only focused on making putts. Listen, we're amateur golfers. Yeah, we want to make more putts. But the reality is what we need to really eliminate is the three putts and stuff like that. That's what we need to do. And then the rest is reading and stroking.
Yeah, I think when I went through it and figured out what combination worked best for me, what my biggest thing that I noticed was the 3 to 5 footers. I didn't have to fight to get it back on plane. It was already there. You know what I mean? So like you're not working against the putter. The putter's sort of working in tandem with you. That was a really cool thing to experience. So I want to ask you one final question today, which I think sort of connects all the dots here. And that is, you clearly have a strong opinion about how people don't use their brain, or that sounds really, really damning. You don't think people spend enough time considering what works for them on the putting green. But if there's one club in the bag that you think people underthink the most, what is it?
Well, I it's putter or wedges. They're two scoring clubs. First of all, I always answer this way. You should go get club fit for the club that you think wastes the most strokes for you on the golf course. Bar none, that should be why you go in. Not because my club's old or whatever. That's fine if you have money and you don't care. But if it's a financial thing and you're like, well, I need to do this like the smartest way possible, then ask yourself, where are you missing the most strokes on the golf course? And go get fit for that golf club, okay? Because that's what's going to help you play better golf. But to answer the question, if somebody was to say they didn't know that, okay, and what I see people browse over, putter, which we already talked about, okay, use it every hole, and they take for granted it's a look and feel thing. There's way more to it. You need to get fit. But wedges, and I preach this to our fitters all the time, and it still irritates me because, you know, our fitters maybe aren't getting the point across. If you're buying a new set of irons and you don't look at your wedges, oh, my God. Like, to me, it's – we need to reclassify wedges as irons, okay? So that when you buy new irons, you look at your wedges, right? Because you need wedges that gap off your irons. And so if you just got new irons that hopefully have new performance, meaning distance, height, ball flight, you're probably going to need something done with your wedges. Regardless if it's buying new wedges or just rebending or reshafting or reworking your existing wedges, they need to match. That's a scoring club. I always tell folks, I go, and I'm sure the statistics change. I should probably update it in my head. I just haven't done it. But I still understand the point. Like, I think it was like 10 years ago, I was looking at scrambling statistics, right? And that's up and down from anywhere inside 60 yards. And long story short, like pros were like 83% or something, right? Think about us, okay? If you were taking honestly, like how many people that, you know, listen to this and then think about, okay, from 60 yards in, and Eli, how often am I getting up and down?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, for me, I'm a five. Well, it's maybe 1-2 times out of 10. Like two might be generous.
So, yeah, I mean, the conversation is more like, are you getting on the green?
Yeah,
are you getting up and down?
My point is, it's like, they don't think about their wedges much. It was so funny. There's a new gentleman that joined our club this year, and some of the staff there, they're like, I lost my partner. He had moved out of town for this event. And they go, hey, you should partner up with this guy. I think you guys would get along really good. I'm like, you know what? I love meeting new people. You sign me up with him. So this person comes in, and Nate's a scratch golfer, great player, okay? First thing I do, I look in his bag, and he has a 52, 54, 56. And I go, what's going on in here? Why? He's like, well, I hit this one this yardage, this one this yardage, and this one this yardage. So I start pulling them out. You know, they're different lengths, different weights. He's like, well, I got that one from here, and I got this one from there. And I'm like, dude, you're so good. So he's like, well, that's my point. I'm good. I'm like, you just relax. So obviously, over the year, I convinced him to come in for irons, and I said, you're getting wedges, okay? And so he gets the wedges reluctantly, calls me 2 days later after he's played two rounds of golf. He's like, oh, my God, you were right. He's like, I'm so much better from 100 yards in right now. He's like, I feel like I can hit all these shots. I'm like, yes, that's the point. He's like, I'm not chunking anymore. Yes, you got the right bounce finally. You know, but he knew how to make things work. That's why, like, he could make them work, but it wasn't effortless. Now he's like, dude, it just feels effortless. I grab it and go. Well, that's what club fitting's about. Even for better players.
I mean, that's the story every time, isn't it? I say that fitting is a hard thing to do, but it might be harder to convince people to get fit than it is to be fit.
Yeah. I mean, this person's a member of a club. They play a lot of golf, but in his mind, it was like, well, they kind of do what I need to do. Well, that's only because you know what you know, but you don't know what you don't know. And so what if I told you could have, you know, freer swings, more full shots, you know, things like that. And then he gets it. And he's like, oh, wow, this is a whole new world. Now I can just swing full with this or do that. I'm like, yeah, you've just been manufacturing thinking that's OK. But that's not what the pros do. So.
Well, I have so many questions, but you know how it goes. There's only so much time in each of these episodes. And it's always an adventure. I feel like we went down some pretty solid rabbit holes today.
We always do.
anything you want to offer up before we take off this time and save a couple of these notes for next?
Yeah, hey, it's a great time to get you fit. I tell everyone, I know we talked about new products and everything, but listen, I also told you there's the best can be. So if we can get you the best can be, why even wait for anything? But I guess my point is, you know where your swing is. You got all went, you know, off season to, you know, work on it. Now's a good time to get fit. And we have our $100 full bag with a purchase. And I think we also have gift cards going right now with a 20% bonus. So look out for that.
Wow. It's a good time to be fit then, obviously.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks, if you feel targeted by any of these conversations we've had today, maybe it is a good time. If you have a putter because you think it's pretty or it just looks right to you, maybe consider going to figure out why. Or if you have, was well, it 52, 54, 56? What was the wedge? 52, 54, 56? If that's what your wedge setup looks like, maybe go to your nearest fitter, ideally a club champion, and figure out why that makes absolutely no sense. And if not, come on the forum and argue with us about it. Because every one of these shows, we drop a conversation on the forum to be had where you can debate and or share your own perspective on things. So if you are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Check the bag, make sure it's good, and I'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.